right, are we ready, staff? I'm going to start the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, February 13th, 2024. I'd like to welcome our two newest members of the Planning Commission, Mr. Bishop, who is the mayor's at-large nominee or appointee to the commission, and Mr. Wimmer, who is Don Shelton's appointee. Thank you. So welcome. With that, we now have a full commission, and we are grateful for that. Staff, welcome to you as well. City Councilwoman Johnson, thank you for joining us this evening as well. I guess we're doing everything at the end. We're just going to jump straight into our commission training then.
Yeah, I thought we'd best to do that first. If you have any votes, then...
Sounds like a good plan. All right, we'll turn over the floor to Greg then.
I'll use the microphone just so it's on the record. and it helps everyone hear me. I don't talk loud enough. Okay. I have some slides as soon as they hopefully come up. No, my screen has something else on it. Flag and P.
This is an essential part of your training to understand that we have these technical issues from time to time.
I'm going to ask a question with you listening and our unofficial parliamentarian. Do we need to approve our agenda before we jump in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we amend the agenda, moving item number C ahead of item B. So moving the agenda to current and then moving the Planning Commission training to C. So switching those two and leaving the rest of tonight's agenda as published.
So we have a motion. Is there any discussion or clarification from staff? Any objections? Okay, I will second that motion. All in favor of that amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we've a motion to amend our agenda, and now I think I need a motion to approve it as amended.
I'll motion to approve the agenda as stated by Commissioner Gedge.
Okay, I will second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Proceed.
I still may have technical difficulties, John, if you can hear me. It's not what I want on the screen. I want just the slide itself, not my just the slide that I'm presenting, not the
for presenter mode,
and not my screen.
You're on the presentation.
We want to keep that a secret.
Yeah. So just that one.
You can hit display settings up there.
Yeah.
Oh, is that?
Yep. I can't find your mouse.
Here you go. Yep, swap. I guess not.
Swap presentation view to slide. Maybe.
Escape out.
Well, for crying out loud, you're not.
And slideshow.
The clock's counting though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. Don't want to do that. That's cool.
There we go. Remember, it's a little better.
Swap.
Didn't start. Yeah. There we go. Okay. Nope.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I want.
That's what you want?
Yeah, but you won't see that.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
It's you don't want that gone?
No, that's fine. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, some of you probably have seen this one before. This is from Steve's. This is Steve's hats slide that he has. So we'll go over, first of all, the different, I guess, powers that the different that you have and don't have. You do have some legislative power. The legislative actions, they create creates a law of general applicability and is based on weighing broad competing policy considerations. Legislative actions are valid if the chosen policy choice is at least reasonably debatable. So that's one thing you have to remember, is reasonably debatable when you're making a legislative decision. And your legislative decisions will be for land use and rezoning, those types.
So Greg, is one way to think of that, like the almost like given the same testimony, the same evidence, or the same input, it could be reasonably reproduced by someone else or some proportion.
Right.
Who would see it.
That would fit. The other we would discuss is administrative actions. They are valid when supported by substantial evidence. Most of your actions are administrative, but staff feels that we present to you substantial evidence of why you should approve something, or if we recommend denial, we'll have that substantial evidence in our staff reports. If somebody in the audience is opposed to it, you'd have to, you know, if they had some substantial evidence that would contradict whatever is presented, then you could weigh that. But it has to be substantial evidence and not just, you know, reasonably debatable. So you have more choices. When it's reasonably debatable is easier in a way. You'd say, well, it doesn't seem that it's going to fit here. We don't want to change this or something. But for a subdivision, it's if it's meeting all the city codes, state laws, and there's really no way no way that you could deny it unless there was something else that came up that would show that it was extremely harmful or whatever to the neighborhood or to the city, and they had to have evidence of that, of what that harm would be. So
I haven't seen a legislative action that this group has weighed in on that isn't just a recommendation. Is there ever a circumstance when our say would be final?
Not on the okay. legislative one. The legislative body, the city council, always has okay. the final say. But your actions when it comes to making a recommendation, again, you can recommend no or yes, but either way, you only need reasonably debatable reasons why.
Okay.
So the quasi-judicial, the Planning Commission, I don't know, you don't get involved in quasi-judicial. That is for our hearing officer for variances and so forth. The City Council also doesn't get involved with the quasi-judicial branch, I guess.
Can I ask a clarifying question on that? Because when I served on a previous municipality's planning commission, they used administrative and quasi-judicial actually at the same. And so I'm just trying to understand why they're different here. Because basically as an administrative action, when we're reviewing that, we're basically being a quasi-judicial commission to review if it's, like you just said, against city code, state law, you know, other factors, and that's why it has to be substantial evidence. So I'm just trying to understand the difference between
I guess you could see in the little box of the administrative blue box does include some, you know, interpret and apply the law, legislative policy choices to particular individuals or groups based on individual facts and circumstances. So when you're listening, you're not listening. When they get up to speak and it's more like public clamor, that's something you're not supposed to be listening to. I guess in a way you're correct. I mean, it's not we don't, just that you will not participate ever in a variance hearing or anything that we classify as a quasi-judicial. In the past, we've had planning Because Planning Commission at one time was the hearing officer for variances, the hearing body. And City Council was at one time as well. And then we also had a Board of Adjustments. So we had different things. And now we've gone to just a hearing officer, and I think that's fairly common around the Valley to do that. And that's, we've had our hearing officer for, I would imagine, almost 10 years now, so.
And just because we have two new members of the commission, and I can't remember from 4 months ago when we talked about this last hour, who is the hearing officer? Are they a city employee, or are they on contract by the city?
He's on contracted by the city, and he happens to be a South Jordan resident, but he is contracted.
Would it be someone's name who's on our book tonight?
Close, but not quite. This one's, his name is Craig Hall.
Okay,
not
Craig
Call.
Hall. Okay.
He is an attorney. I think he was the former city attorney of Holiday, but he's retired. So, move on to the next little slide here. You can move. We'll start with the, I gotta look at the big one too, because I can't see this on my screen. This is the different levels. There's the land use application, the advisory review body, deciding body, and the appellate body. And if we go across the top, for general plan amendments and rezonings or zoning text amendments, they're considered legislative actions. And the Planning Commission, as at least four of you know, you are the review body, advisory or review body for those things. The deciding body is the City Council, and if there's an appeal, it goes to the District Court for that. So you can see there that it's the City Council that they are the deciding body for legislative actions. When we move to the next row, the administrative actions, which are most of the things you'll be seeing as Planning Commission, condominium and subdivision plats, subdivision amendments, site plans, conditional use permits, property line adjustments, those things. Actually, you don't see property line adjustments anymore. We have they are not required to go to Planning Commission. They are done by city staff on property line adjustments. So that one should probably change that. And also for the new planning commissioners, the site plan review in Daybreak does not come forward. It is done by staff only, so you will not see site plans from Daybreak. We do bring the subdivisions from Daybreak, even though in the PC zone it is not required, but we feel that it's best to, at least there is some public involvement with subdivision in Daybreak on that. So we do bring those forward to you.
Can I make just a quick comment or ask maybe recommendation to the council that as they are considering the master development agreement with Daybreak 2.0, whatever the annex property is, that because a lot of times when we hear Daybreak items, they are site plan related and we're not able to, you know, hear them in our process. So maybe just something to reconsider with Daybreak being, you know, that was established whatever 20 plus years ago. So just maybe something to look at.
I think that's, it's come up before that, you know, with the City Council, but again, they haven't opened that up yet. So that's something that we'll pass on to them. The advisory review body is city staff in these cases, and then it comes to you as the Planning Commission. We bring the staff report. We'll have a staff report for that. And then there is a public hearing for all administrative and for legislative. There's a public hearing for all of those items that come forward to the Planning Commission and to City Council. So, but in the past, the Planning Commission was not the deciding body either for any of the others. It was about 15 years ago, the City Council decided they did not want to be the deciding body on every item. And they must have made their meetings for going too long. So Let the Planning Commission be the deciding body. And it's allowed by the state law. You know, the Utah Code says the City Council can choose who they would like to be the land use authority over certain projects, certain administrative reviews. For an appeal, if it's appeal, that goes to the hearing officer first and then to the district court if your action is appealed. So,
do you have any numbers of how often our decisions go to the hearing officer? I think of one that we've had in the last 2 years regarding turf in the Jordan River area, but
they applied for a variance on that turf.
So, but is it more uncommon? I'm assuming it's more uncommon.
They also had a fence on their front yard and so forth, and that one that did, you know, it was, you had no option but to deny it because it is administrative. It was clear in our code that it was not, shouldn't be allowed. But and when I went to the hearing officer, he also didn't approve their appeal. So, and I don't think they've taken it to district court that I know of. So,
is that the only one, or I'm assuming it's very infrequent that appeal process occurs?
I have a question, though. Did they appeal our decision, or did they just apply for a variance? Because there's a difference, right?
Right. I think they didn't appeal it. They applied for the variance. Okay. But Mr. Simonson has something to add.
As I recall, because I did handle the city side of the variance, it was just a variance application. But the applicant's attorney and the applicant also basically were treating it as an appeal because they argued the same issues beyond what the variance was. And the other comment I would just make is that the fact that they are so seldom appealed from this body is a testament that you're following the law. Because if you weren't following the law, then we'd have appeals all over the place. And I like to think, in fact, I know that we have a well-trained, hard-working planning commission. And you endeavor to do what's right, and you do what's right. And so we don't get a lot of appeals from that. And that saves everybody time and money.
To add to that one, I guess maybe the applicant on that project did go to City Council after they had their appeals kind of ran out. And they went to the City Council, and I believe the City Council has directed staff to bring forward an ordinance change that would allow some front yard fencing of a certain height. And that, I believe, at some point that will come before the commission. So that will help them to, because they were really mostly concerned about having that fencing, remember, to keep the children that were waiting at the bus stop from playing in their yard, I guess, so.
Is artificial turf something that the City Council is also considering looking at? I just think we're going to see more and more of those.
It's the artificial turf. I don't think they're going to. And I don't know if we did. I don't remember. Did the artificial turf actually get denied, or was it just the fencing? Because they also had a structure in their front yard that was really tall that they weren't allowed to have, a giant fountain or something. But the turf, we do allow artificial turf in other places, and it usually is staff review on approval, but it is limited to how much they can have, because half of the front yard has to be landscaped, and no more than half of that can be live turf, but they have to still have live plant material mixed in with their artificial turf, or they have artificial turf and they can have the rest of it be real grass or other plant material that's going to cover the rest of it. So that was because they had their entire front yard with turf, that what they were appealing. I don't think that's going to change on that.
So just procedural. So in a case like this one we were referencing where it was denied and then hearing officers, applicants can reapply if they go through the full process, pay the fees, and if they correct the information or ordinance is adopted by city council, that's fine process-wise for us to hear that same item again. There's no double jeopardy. I don't know the legal term, you know, that we've already denied an item. You know, that's okay to occur.
Right. If they...
But the onus is on the applicant to go through the process, document it, pay the fees, all that.
Correct.
Okay.
So the next line of administrative items are SRD, small residential developments, and single family non-subdivision. Those, you don't see those very often. So we, you'll see more things like that will be coming forward, like the flag lot subdivisions. They're sort of like small residential developments, but small SRDs are residential are lots for somebody that's not in a subdivision, and they just want to build a house on there, and it's just a vacant lot, and there you will not see any of those, only because it's staff review on that. But we don't get very many of those anymore because we don't have too many vacant lots that are just, you know, a third of an acre laying around that somebody already hasn't built on. The city has grown out quite quickly. But that's on there. But if it comes forward, city staff is, you know, advisory and review body, and the, I guess, the deciding body, which would be the city engineer. He decides on that. They have to. What we look at when staff is looking at on one of those is if there's no curb gutter, if there's no improvements, sidewalk, those kind of things need to be provided because they were never in a subdivision and maybe they never had to put them in. But on our major streets, the city's already put in sidewalks almost on all of our major streets. But at some side streets, there are lots that are not in a subdivision and don't have the curb gutter, sidewalk, any of that amenity because they were never part of a subdivision that was required to put it in. So those are the things we look for on that usually.
Sorry, I don't want to jeopardize, but I have a question on this too, just because I have personal experience, just a question. So if there are multiple lots that are going to not be subdivided but combined, would that into a singular lot for a home build, would that fall under this line item? Or would there have to be any, because I think even though they're not subdividing, it falls under the subdivision.
If they were lots that were, if there are lots that are not in a subdivision and there was like a multiple and they wanted to combine them to make a lot large enough, or then that would qualify as an SRD at that point.
That's why I know. Sorry, my lot sale didn't go to the Planning Commission. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, I think there's one in your neighborhood right now that we're looking at that is combining is not really combining any lots. They're doing a property line adjustment to make one lot big enough to build a house on it. So,
and just a question on something since you just raised that, because I'm the adjoining property on that, I would need to recuse myself from that item during the meeting because I am direct property, you know, adjoining or could have impact, correct? Just so there's not a conflict on behalf of the city. I can testify as a for or against as a member of the public, but I would need to recuse myself as a commission member, correct?
I don't think so. Greg, just because you live next door, does it?
That'd be a good topic of training.
If they don't have any.
When should we recuse ourselves?
Yeah.
If we have a financial.
Sorry, just because. Yeah. Direct material investment, but where it could, you know, impact my fence or other things, I think there would be impact. And so that's why I just asked, when would I need to recuse myself?
You know? The value of your home. It could impact the value of your home depending on what they build and how they build it.
I guess it depends on the matter. If it's a legislative decision and your property will benefit financially if one zoning is over another, then I think it would be a good idea to recuse yourself on that.
Great, thank you. I want to protect the city as well. I have an example from my past of getting the city into an appeal, so I want to make sure I avoid those moving forward, and my fellow commissioners as well.
I've got a question, Greg.
Yes.
On like a subdivision site plan, subdivision amendment, if you have a subdivision that is no curb gutter sidewalk, and you have someone who's going to amend the subdivision and do something in there, are you going to, does the city require them to put in curb gutter and sidewalk, even though the rest of the neighborhood does not have it?
Probably not. They may be require a bond for in the future, so they can come in, but they wouldn't make, especially gutter and things like that. If you put in a curb and gutter, then the water drains, and then where does it drain to? It goes to one neighbor or the next, and it would definitely not drain. You know, a big rainstorm, the water wouldn't run onto the property that that's being developed, but it would be running to the next door neighbors and getting an extra share, which wouldn't be right. So at that point, but if and usually I don't. It probably wouldn't happen. I don't even know if we'd make. It's kind of an engineering thing if they would require a bond to be put in for future, in case the city decides to come back in there and put it in and put something in for the whole subdivision, which I don't think that's going to happen either. So,
hey Greg, I have a question. Mm-hmm. You used a term earlier that I hadn't heard before. Is it flagstone lot?
Flag lot.
Flag lot. What is that?
It's basically if you have a, there are a lot of properties in South Jordan that are fairly large, and they have room enough to divide the property and the rear. And so a flag lot is, it has a narrow strip, say 20 feet wide of property that will front on a driveway that would go back to the back side of the lot and create a new lot in the back behind the existing home. And then that's the flag lot. And it looks like a flag. So it's got a long pole and then comes off to the side. So. And
I'm on a flag lot, so I draw a picture of my lot.
Ah, okay.
Thank you.
So and those, they come forward every once in a while, and that's like that. I think there may be one on your next agenda. So.
And just on flag lots, as long as they're current, existing already, there's no action needed by the homeowners. It's only if it's going to be for a new lot that's going to be basically accessing it through the flagpole to the back flag lot property, right. Correct?
Yeah, if it's existing, I mean, it either went through the flag lot process or it was done before we had any ordinances that would, that would require it. So
50 years ago.
On that. Let's see, where were we? The last item is variances, and it's city staff is the advisory and review board, but the deciding body is our hearing officer, and it goes straight to district court if they appeal.
What fall under like a variance? I mean, obviously like fence size or yard size. I mean, what are just, I guess, common variances that might
variances come up? Could be something like a setback. You know, they want to, there's something, they'll apply for a variance because they want something, a setback that's less than what's required. And they're pretty hard to come by to get a variance approved because it's usually, there's got to be some sort of hardship or something that's different about the property itself. And it can't be an economic hardship either. But if there's something on the property, like you have a creek that runs through your property, and if it runs right down the middle, but if you want to build something on the other side of it, I don't know, just different things can happen with that. But usually, I guess you can, Greg can tell you, the hearing officer, that usually people, I don't say waste their money, but we try to tell them that, staff or up front, we tell them we're not going to recommend in favor of it. Usually we can't find that. There's five criteria that they have to be met, and all five have to be met. Or the hearing officer has to decide that it is being met, and we can tell up front that most of them are not met. So
the best for those citizens, do you guys advise them to contact their legislative person, their city council rep, to maybe consider a code change or
No, we just advise them, well, we advise them they can apply for that. Okay. Most of our, we have ordinances for a reason, and it's like if the city council wants us to change a 10-foot setback to 5 feet, it goes for everywhere in that zone. And that may not be popular with other neighbors that would prefer distance, so.
We did have that, right? Like someone put forth a proposed amendment to city code. Am I remembering correctly?
On the flag lots.
Or no,
it wasn't a flag lot.
The same variance item, wasn't it? They're under consideration of the council?
I mean, it was for accessory building and side lot or something.
In a side yard.
And I remember, I thought it was like actual text was brought forward. I
can't remember that one for sure, but I know we've maybe a year or two ago, changed the code on accessory structures in the side yard. If there used to be, they had to meet the same side yard setback as the main building. So if you, it's a 10-foot side yard and you had 20 feet, you could put a shed or something on that side that was, it has to be 10 feet away, but the ordinance now says that if the structure that's being proposed is under 10 feet, 10 feet or under in height, it only needs to have a 5-foot setback instead of the 10. So that's the only part that's changed.
Okay.
There.
What's the difference between this sort of variance that city staff rules on versus there are sections of our code where, unless approved by the Planning Commission, like accessory dwelling unit height compared to the main building, things like that. There are some that we specifically get called out as being able to make a decision on.
Right, and because of that, because they're in the code that way, you get to make the decision.
So just as has been defined by the code.
Right.
All right.
So, and I think there's some things in there. I mean, you still show, on the height and so forth, you still have to, I think it says in there that you should be looking to see how it affects the neighborhood. I mean, if there's other buildings in the neighborhood that are, as tall or taller than what they're proposing, is it really going to stand out and make a difference and those kind of things? But if it's the neighborhood's all ramblers and they want to build a two-story with a 25-foot tall, garage, I mean, back 30, 40 years ago, houses, they were only at the peak of a rambler was probably 18 feet. So those kind of things would stand out. But even now, single family homes with the roof pitches that they have are pretty tall. So.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Comment, I don't think I saw this slide 4 years ago. This is a great slide. I like it. Maybe I'm a visual learner or something like that.
It was one we had. I need to update it. So I guess we didn't show it to you 4 years ago. Sorry.
No, it's great.
I know you mentioned the lot line adjustment ones that you were going to change. I mean, what's just the frequency of those? I mean, is it a lot? And so that's why you want to move that to city staff or move that city staff?
Yeah, well, the property line adjustments, they are in the state code, and there's certain ways that they don't even have to go through the city to do it. If it's a property line adjustment between two properties that are meets and bounds, and are not neither one of them in a subdivision, they can just do it by deed and go to the county. They don't have to talk to staff at all.
And they would just go to the county or whoever the recording entity is.
Yeah, and that's a little bit concerning, and only if they want to go ahead, they start creating something that's too small or whatever, on a lot, because they are zoned, whatever they're zoned, if it's zoned agricultural and it's A1, and they want to make one lot that's, they have two equally sized lots, but they want to change one to make it much smaller, less than an acre, then they're creating a non-conforming lot size. And we can't stop it in that case either. But As in but in subdivisions, if any one of the lots is in a subdivision, it has to go, in our process, it goes through staff, and the city engineer is the final say, and he holds a public hearing himself on that.
And if the city engineer approves that, and the county, you know, the recorder's office, do they have any jurisdiction that they could reject that decision?
No, they can't reject it, but what we have is the city engineer will approve and it's signed, our legal department signs it as well. It's a notice of change of ownership or whatever on these properties and change of property line and so forth. And we've really struggled to make sure that the applicant knows that, yes, you have to record that, but you also have to record a deed that actually causes the change, because they record that and they think it's changed. No, that was just the notice of approval that you got approval to do it. You didn't do it unless you record a deed. And
I'm assuming that is there a public, you know, public notification process? They're talking to the person they're adjusting the property with, but in case they're not, is there, you know, I'm assuming there's some sort of public notice you're getting in the mail within certain.
Yeah, we notice every adjacent property owner, so they know what's going on that. But it's funny, I've noticed, we have a few of those. I look at on our aerial photos, and they, you know, has property lines. And there was one that was a few years ago and still hasn't been changed, but they did a property line adjustment to take some property away from the adjacent property owner. And they had an agreement, and the other property owner said, fine, you must have purchased it or whatever. They got the notice of approval, recorded that, but they never recorded a deed. So right now, their swimming pool is halfway in the neighbor's yard still. And I don't think either one of the property owners know that. So
some will come along someday.
Yeah. I mean, one of them is going to sell, and the new neighbors are going to say, hey, that, get your pool out of my yard. Anyway, that's all I have on my side, and it was more than a half an hour, so sorry, Greg.
You can just keep going.
One more question about that slide. Not a process thing or anything, but I know our last general plan is dated 2020, and the previous one's 2015. I was just wondering if are we coming up on another one?
Actually, the previous one was 2010.
Oh, okay.
And it's usually every 10 years, but I believe we're going to be starting earlier instead of starting a year or two. We're going to start sooner than that. I'm not sure how soon. It's kind of up to Stephen and see if we can do it. We do have lost a position in our department. The position that David Mann held was taken away, and also David is no longer an employee of South Jordan. So we had to cut back on something, and that's what happened.
So related to that, I know
he was our long-range planner. So
and the transportation mapper implied, but also with the annexation of the property to the land in the west, do we need to move that timeline? Is that one of the reasons why we're starting 1 to 2 years, because of the annexation?
It could be. I'm not sure exactly, but we're going to, you know, we'll start the process. We don't know if hopefully it'll end before by 2030, so we're starting the process sooner.
So just real quick, in case, you know, the property in the annex part is ready to be built upon, or items come in before 2030 or the new general plan, is there a process that if items come before us on the Planning Commission, how do we act on those items? Because they're not on the general plan, they're not on the future land use map, they're not on the transportation plan.
Well, pretty much they'll be the same as Daybreak, though. They'll have a development agreement that's all set up for whatever is going to be done, the density, these minimum lot sizes. It'll be different than Daybreak because the things that we didn't like about the Daybreak agreement.
Yep. Thank you, and I'd like to reference my previous comment earlier in the meeting.
So. It's like that, you know, not having them come forward to the Planning Commission.
I'm trying to help, you know, Mr. Simonson out by stretching out more.
Here, look you in the eye. For those new commissioners, my name is Greg Simonson, and I am assistant city attorney, and pretty much I do the land use work here in the city, legal work, of course, with Ryan Luce, who's my boss and is the city attorney. Commissioner Bishop,
yes,
and Wimmer, I want to welcome you. Thank you for your willingness to serve. This is not an easy job. You'll get these big packets sent to you with all sorts of maps and reports and so forth that you're going to have to go through. If you don't understand them sometimes, don't get down on yourself because that sometimes they're not really understandable. But if you have questions, you can call me or you can call Greg or you can call your fellow commissioners and get a lot of good input. This is a lot to take in. I've been doing this for 40 years, not with the city, but before I worked for the city. I've been with the city 3.5 years. And before I worked for the city, a large part of my practice was representing what I called LULUs, which stands for locally unpopular land uses. And so I represented a lot of gravel pits, and oil refineries, things we all need and use, but nobody wants them in their city. And a lot of what goes on here is what do we want in the city and what does the law require in the city? And one of the things I love about this area of the law is the basis of all of this begins with what you were sworn to uphold tonight, and that's the United States Constitution and the Utah Constitution. And the 5th and the 14th Amendments of those constitutions require that people are allowed to have their life, liberty, and property, and that cannot be taken without due process of law. And so that's the beginning point of all land use discussion, are those constitutional amendments. And you start asking yourself, when is property, you know, grubby property as important a right as life and liberty? And our founders certainly thought so. They put it right there in the same phrase that you cannot deprive people of their life, liberty, or property. And so when are we depriving a person of their property? If we require that a house be set back from a property line by 10 feet, have we now been deprived of 10 feet of our property? These are the kinds of things that I've spent 40 years arguing about. When do we cross the line? And that's from the Constitution and that beginning point of taking life, liberty, and property without due process of law, we have all of these more local, state, and local ordinances. And then we've talked about cases and how we haven't really had many come up to the courts. But those cases that we do have, they set the parameters for many of these things about when something is a taking of property, or when can we establish regulations that restrict the use of property. Because believe me, whether you want to or not, as you sit on this commission, you're going to be giving a recommendation to city council people about whether property ought to be restricted and how it ought to be developed and what is, you know, what zoning laws should be there and what should be allowed in what part of the city. The general plan, you're going to be, the law says that the Planning Commission has to be involved in the development of the general plan. And so when the general plan is updated, and it's updated from time to time, aside from big updates, we have these minor updates that come up from time to time, and all of those by law have to go before the Planning Commission for recommendation. Every zoning change by law has to go before the Planning Commission for recommendation. Now, why doesn't that seem repetitive? And am I really useful as a planning commissioner because all I'm doing is recommending one way or the other on some of these changes, and that ultimately the city council has the power to say thumbs up or thumbs down? Here are my thoughts. This is the Simonson interpretation, but I think it's very, very helpful to have a body that's not elected, a body of composed of people that live in the city that are going to pretty objectively look at these laws and whether they're good for the city. Now, it is true that the city council may disagree with you and go a different direction, but my experience is that you will always be respected, that our city council is very interested in what the Planning Commission did and why they did it. The more informed your discussion is, the more it becomes, I mean, the city council, they want to know if there was a split decision down here, if there was a 4-to-1 vote or something, they want to know why and what the opinions were of dissenting commissioners. And so you're a very, very important body on these legislative decisions, even though you don't have the final say. And you're required by law. The Planning Commission is required by law. And if we didn't have a Planning Commission, we couldn't pass those things, because it says you got to have a Planning Commission, and they've got to give a recommendation before it can ever go to that city council. So if we didn't have people like you here in our city and in cities throughout the state, we just wouldn't be able to make these legislative decisions. So I know that at times that you may feel powerless because you got to follow these restrictive laws and so forth, but I just want to emphasize to you how important you are and what you're doing. Now I want to introduce you to the books that your fellow commissioners already have.
Thank you.
Now your pastor or bishop or whoever your spiritual leader may tell you to read the Bible on a regular basis, I'm asking you, and I'm not trying to compare myself to them, but I am asking you to wear out this book in the same way that your pastor or bishop or whatever is asking you to wear out your scriptures. And this book is by Craig Call, who is he's the former state land use ombudsman, and he is really good. And because he's so good, I hope if we have time, we're going to actually read from a few things that he says about what we've been discussing tonight. I want to talk to you about these standards that Greg Schindler has brought up, because the courts in Utah have hammered on them and hammered on them and hammered on them. So it's my job to hammer on them with you. Administrative decisions require substantial evidence. So all those things that were on there require substantial evidence. Now, some of the things, this is going to happen to you. It may happen your next meeting. It may happen 6 months from now, but this is what's going to happen. A matter's going to come up, and it's going to be maybe a site plan. And it's an administrative decision. And so a site plan, if it's zoned for that use in the site plan and the site plan meets all the setback requirements and all the other requirements that you have to do, you pretty much got to pass it. But here's what's going to happen. 40 people are going to show up, and they're going to impassionately tell you, or passionately tell you, how if you pass this, it's going to destroy their property, their kids are going to die, the traffic is going to get so heavy that they can't even get out of their driveways, and a parade of horribles. Now, I want to explain to you what substantial evidence is, as opposed to public clamor, because administrative hearings are substantial evidence. If a traffic engineer comes up and says, violates this law because of this traffic issue and because of this configuration, and explains why, that's substantial evidence. Somebody that really knows what they're talking about. Or somebody comes up and says, this is going to kill the value of my property. Is that substantial evidence? It's their opinion and it's their fear. I mean, we don't want to ever downplay people's feelings or fears. But on the other hand, if a property appraiser comes up and hands you an appraisal for the surrounding properties and gives their opinion about whether their property is going to go down in value, that's likely substantial evidence on that issue. And so I'm just preparing you that on the administrative decisions, it's just a whole different kettle of fish. It's just different. Now let's talk about the legislative decisions.
Greg, can I ask a question real quick?
Certainly. Anybody can ask any question anytime.
I have a note in my book from the last time we talked about this. It says personal experience can be evidence. And like, under what circumstances in an administrative hearing would personal experience be considered evidence?
Okay, great question. And you're like, I mean, this is kind of quasi-judicial because it's your job to weigh the evidence. I've given kind of extreme examples of what's substantial evidence and what isn't. But there can be hazy areas, and you've got to weigh whether something is how much value to give something, some evidence. So if somebody comes up and says, I have lived at this location for 20 years and have observed 25 accidents because of this configuration, I think that you've got to weigh that in your whole consideration. On the other hand, if somebody says, I just believe that this is unsafe and we shouldn't be doing this, and then you've just had the city traffic engineer give a different opinion, then you've got to weigh between what you've heard from the city traffic engineer and from the person that just came up and offered their opinion. And it's not an easy job. When people get frightened, that's hard, but people get frightened. How would you feel if you honestly felt that a certain decision is going to take away $100,000 of the equity of your house? Now, whether that opinion is reasonable or not, these people will come up, and that is going to be their fear. They have staked their futures to a certain extent financially on the value of that house. And we have a lot of very valuable houses in this neighborhood, or in this city. We have beautiful neighborhoods, we have beautiful subdivisions, and we have a lot of people that are very interested in protecting their value, the value. So I really want to highlight the difference on administrative decisions on the standard of evidence from legislative decisions. We were told earlier that the standard, unlike the substantial evidence standard, the standard for legislative decisions is reasonably debatable. Okay? Well, can you hardly think, okay, you get an application for a zoning change that comes before you. What's not reasonably debatable? I mean, you know, unless it is an oil refinery in the front of City Hall or something so obvious that it would never even make it this far, just about everything is reasonably debatable. And so you're not so restricted about the evidence that you consider as you are under the other standard for administrative, the substantial evidence standard that you are restricted to on administrative decisions. And a few years back, probably 4 or 5 years now, some of the developers in this state were so concerned about the misunderstanding of these standards and what the powers of the city or the planning commission are, that they put in place or this training. And I think the training is a good idea to get that, and we'll have ongoing training. But before you can even take a vote under that statute, you've got to have this training about the scope of your powers and duties. Now, to illustrate in closing here, and I know we've taken...
Greg, there's a question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a question about administrative decisions and site plans.
Yeah.
I know the staff will work with an applicant, you know, like on their site plan, but it sounded like, you know, as long as they meet certain requirements, it's pretty much like a settled decision or a clear decision. Does the applicant just have the chance to say, okay, staff, I don't want to hear any more of your ideas, and I just want to apply for a...
Yes, and we have seen, it's rare, okay, but we get applications occasionally where staff recommends against it.
Yeah, okay.
Because they've failed to go through that process. They don't often understand staff as their best friend. They really are trying to make them successful.
They have to give reasonable evidence to overturn that recommendation, right, from staff.
But it's rare that we'll get a negative recommendation. they've always done their homework and crossed their T's and dotted their I's. So unless somebody comes forward and contests like a property line, something shows up that was unexpected that staff didn't find for some reason, which we've also seen. You're right, the administrative ones tend to be
kind of cut and dry.
Yeah.
Cool. A lot of times, if I may add, like sometimes that's just bringing everyone along than the administrative ones. So sometimes, as Greg was talking about, you have a lot of people in the audience, and so you ask questions. If you think about a lot of people who, if they're in attendance, this is like maybe their first time or second time interfacing with city government or in a way that affects them so personally. And so sometimes, like, asking questions helps, you know. You'll see as we get into it, if you haven't heard or seen, is like when we have a public hearing, we'll take comments, and then the chair will, like in this case, Commissioner Hollis, will then work with and ask those questions of city staff, so we get a chance to explain everything to everyone, and that's usually where a lot of understanding is shared. And so if nothing else, that's a big service because it helps people to understand.
But I would just add, even if you know the answer to a question, like a lot of times we'll ask a question to staff, even though we may know the answer, just so that for the benefit of those in attendance, so that they know the answer as well, even though it may be something that's obvious to us. Somebody that's sitting in the audience may not know the answer to that. So it can be helpful, and staff is very good to accommodate us when we ask the same question in every meeting.
Every single meeting.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you.
Great question, great answers. And I mentioned earlier on that you can always ask your fellow commissioners your questions, and this is why. They know what's going on. Okay, so let's turn really quickly to page 31 of your book here. And this is discussing one of the landmark cases. Harmon's versus the city of Draper. I think this was around year 2000 case. And Harmon's came in for a zoning rechange. They wanted to put in their grocery store, and they had all of this substantial evidence. They had charts and graphs and what this would do for the economy and how much it was needed, and very, very evidence-loaded presentation on why this zoning should take place, this rezone, so they could put in their grocery store. The neighbors came down, and again, we're talking about a legislative decision, and the neighbors come down, and they don't have charts, and they don't have graphs, but they have anger. And they're pointing out things, and they're saying, giving their opinions and so forth. And the city council denied the rezone. And the Harmon's appealed. And the court used this occasion to really set the reasonable, debatable standard. And I won't... You can see the discussion of this case begins on page 29 and continues all the way to page 32. And I won't take the time to read all that, but let's go to page 31. The paragraph, the second paragraph that begins, "The court also held." The court also held that the public clamor that occurred at the hearing could be appropriately cited as a factor in the council's decision. Now, you never get that on an administrative decision, but on a legislative, they're saying that's all right. Although the comments by neighbors were not based on specific facts or substantial evidence, legislative decisions need not be based on that kind of analysis. The court stated, it is a legislative body's prerogative to determine public policy. A judicial body's job is to interpret the policy, and an administrative body's job to enforce the policy. Establishing zoning classification reflects a legislative policy decision which courts will not interfere except in the most extreme cases. I ought to read that next sentence. Indeed, we have found no Utah case, nor a case from any other jurisdiction, in which a zoning classification was reversed on grounds that it was arbitrary and capricious. And then I'm going to read this part because I think it goes to Commissioner Bevin's question earlier. In performing their duty, this is the next paragraph down, in performing their duty, it is both the privilege and obligation to take into consideration their own knowledge of such matters and also to gather available pertinent information from all possible sources and give consideration to it in making the determination. Okay, now I won't take the time to go through the next case. The next case is, you know, what is an administrative decision, and it discusses the Wadsworth versus West Jordan case. And I would highly recommend that for your own reading. So I think my time is probably long spent. But before I sit down, do you have any questions? All right. Thank you very much.
I do have one question.
Yes, Commissioner.
Are there ever opportunities where the label is properly applied before the matter is presented? Do we say this is an administrative or legislative decision?
Yeah. In fact, when you get your agenda in front of you.
Fun stuff. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, staff. So that will conclude the onboard training for our new commissioners. I believe that also gets us all an hour of towards our 4 hours of training for the year. So we will now move on to item D this evening, which is to approve our minutes from our meeting on January 23rd of 2023. Commissioners who were present, any discussion on those minutes, any corrections? Okay, I'm ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the minutes that from our January 23rd, 23 meeting as published.
Thank you. I will second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, our next item of business is to elect our Planning Commission Chair and Vice Chair for 2024. And then right after that, we'll also discuss our Architectural Review Committee appointee for the year. So new commissioners, our Chair and our Vice Chair, I don't even know what to tell you those roles are. I would say that you chair the meetings that we have, as I've done this evening, and then the vice chair fills in as needed for the chair when they're not available.
And you also notify the chair if you're unable to make a meeting. Right. So we make sure we have a quorum.
Right. We always have to have three members to conduct business. So majority rules on our votes, but we always have to have a minimum of three votes to pass an
item. Or the meeting gets canceled if it's not three.
Right. Right. We won't even have.
Because we couldn't even approve the agenda.
Yeah.
There we go. So, yeah, so just some of that coordination, sometimes coordination with city council as far as joint training opportunities and discussing items that we might want them to review. Often we're a sounding board. We often get to hear what's bothering citizens the most, and so we'll sometimes make recommendations for staff to review parts of our code or ordinances and make recommendations to city council to consider certain items. So.
Yeah, and then I believe also we every time we have a new commissioner, we have at least one of them be the chair. Is that right?
I think. Well, and with two, a chair and a vice chair.
So one of you could be. Like, no, just kidding.
He's mostly kidding.
I'm totally kidding.
So our rules do define that we do have to have these two positions. We are eligible or able to make amendments to those rules and have additional positions as we see fit. But at this time, this is what we've been operating with. So as we proceed through the year, if we do need like a parliamentarian, we joke, but Nathan unofficially is that role. That is something that we could certainly consider. So I'm going to then open the floor for nominations for commission chair for 2024.
I will nominate Michelle Hollis for chair for 2024.
Okay, we have...
Are we going to do them separately or together?
Let's do them separately. Okay, so we have a motion or a nomination. Do we need a second for that?
I'll second that, and then you have to accept the nomination.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I am willing to accept that, but I am open to anybody else who would be interested in trying that role.
It's too early for a coup.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor of that, please indicate.
Aye.
Any opposed?
You gotta turn your mic on.
Not opposed. Aye.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. This is something I actually very much enjoy. So our next item of business is nominations for our vice chair. So again, Nathan has been serving in that role. If he's willing, I'm happy to nominate him, but also to our new members, if you would like an opportunity to learn the ropes really quickly, or if Ms. Bevins or Mr. Catmull is interested, now is the time to speak.
So I would like to nominate Commissioner Bevins. I would also nominate, anyway, I could do multiple nominations.
Sure. I'm willing to second that. Are you willing to accept it?
Sure.
Mr. Gedge, would you like to also be considered?
That's fine.
Okay. Are there any others that would like to be considered for vice chair?
I mean, I would nominate Commissioner Gedge. I think he's done a fine job as well.
I agree.
I think so also.
And now I just made a really tough choice.
Yeah,
he
did.
Really tough choice.
Jeez, Mr. Sorry.
Well, you made my decision when council reappointed me much easier for the future.
So, we'll just, but anyway.
Okay. I guess I will close nominations then, and we will vote. All in favor of Commissioner Bevins as vice chair?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Last item of business, we need a representative to the Architectural Review Committee. Ms. Bevins has been filling this role. This is a representative that goes when they have these meetings. Greg?
We have one tomorrow.
We do have one tomorrow. They're not every other week, though, right? They're maybe once a month.
Architectural Review Committee meets when necessary, but only the day after a Planning Commission meeting.
I think we met 5 times last year.
Okay.
So they, yeah,
but it could be more than that.
They can be scheduled, you know, if we have enough items, they could have one the day after every Planning Commission, but that doesn't happen, so it's...
And they're 8 a.m., 8:30 a.m.?
8:30 on Wednesday mornings after Planning Commission.
Do you want to tell everybody what the role is?
Sure, so it's basically an applicant comes before the Architectural Review Committee. You are just reviewing the architecture for whatever building or development it is that they have brought forth, and then it will come before the Planning Commission for the other approvals, but it's just architectural approval, making sure it meets the standards for the city architecture.
You've done that before, haven't you, Mr. Catmull?
I've done
it before,
yes.
The
other thing I would add is it's a good way to get early feedback, because mm-hmm. There is a little bit of wiggle room, and the questions you ask and the things you learn from how things are impacted, and then the responsibility then comes on the items that you do hear, the few items, and I think it was similar for me when I was there, like four, five in a year.
It is a great learning.
You can share what you know, if it's been reviewed, you can share. Sometimes I've been asked, or I was asked, like, oh, you were there, was there any concerns, right? Or how did it go? And I don't know, it's an easy, good way to step in and help too, if that's of interest. You know, it doesn't require a lot of experience. Just use your head, and listen and learn. It's a good opportunity to get to know other people too. Like there's a city council representative in there.
And some architects from the city and staff. Mm-hmm.
I believe that's still Councilwoman Johnson, is that correct? Are you still on that committee?
Yes, I am.
Okay. That was probably out of order, sorry.
Okay.
So I probably should have done this for the other two. I open up the floor to nominations for this position. Is anybody interested in this? I know that Ms. Bevins is willing to do it again for another year, but also willing to let somebody else have that opportunity.
I'm happy to learn and do anything, and I'm also happy to let her do it.
Oh, Ms. Bevins, then you better.
I will nominate you, Mr. Ray Wimmer.
That's not how I went.
All right, I will second that nomination. Will you accept it?
I will.
Okay, is there anybody else? All right, I'm going to close the floor to nominations then and put it to a vote. All those in favor of Mr. Wimmer?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wimmer. So tomorrow morning, 8:30, in the future, you'll get an email notification ahead
of time. Does he have a city email yet?
Probably not.
For access?
No.
Okay.
Does he?
I don't think so.
If you would give me your... Can I send the documents to his personal email? Am I okay to do that?
Sure.
Just yes. The packet for tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Are you able to attend tomorrow? Because
yes.
I am leaving town tonight, so I cannot go tomorrow.
Yes, I can attend.
If you'll just, will you put your...
The meetings are held upstairs on the second floor of City Hall, so that's where they're at, in the Maple conference room. They'll just come upstairs to the front counter and they'll
tell
let you in.
Who you are.
Look for a guy who looks like me and he'll get you there.
Look lost.
No, tell them who you are. The first time they had me sit out there with the applicant for a little while they had their pre-meeting, because they didn't know I was with the Planning Commission.
Okay.
All right. I think that concludes our Planning Commission business. So staff, business for us this evening.
I don't have any other business other than to say, like I think I've mentioned, we might have two items on the next Planning Commission meeting. One would be a subdivision amendment in Daybreak, and that one I'm pretty sure is happening. Another one would be a flaglot subdivision with the rezoning. And so I'm not sure on that one yet, because there's a lot left to be done before it can get mailed out. So,
okay. Any other staff business? Okay. Comments from the Planning Commission. Is Mr. Day still back there?
Yes.
Mr. Day, congratulations on your 20-year work anniversary with the city. That's phenomenal. And then we've already done our welcomes to our new staff, or our new commission members. We're pleased to have you with us. We're pleased to have a full commission again. Thank you for accepting. I did attend the work session last week with City Council, where these two gentlemen were introduced to the City Council. And then, Laurel, did you have anything you wanted to touch on from the City Council meeting?
Sure. Yeah, I attended the City Council meeting. There wasn't any major issues at play, but there was a review of the Arts Council. They amended some bylaws for the Arts Council. They went over some fee changes for Mulligans. There was a really good presentation on Mulligans, and then there was also a presentation about water and changing an application for a grant for some water usage and switching out to some turf and some of our recreational facilities. So other than that, they vacated a right-of-way in Daybreak, and that was it.
Thank you. Mr. Wimmer, anything for this commission?
No.
Steve, Nathan?
I will be out the first meeting of March, so just put that
in. Oh, are we canceling?
That caucus?
That would be
caucus
City Council
City
week.
Council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking spring break. Do we, is anyone?
Yeah, I will
I'm
be
gone.
Out of town for spring break.
I
so
am too.
March 26th.
Yep.
If you could know by next time so that we can get a count to know if we should hold business that evening.
I will be here.
Okay. And then you will be gone on the 12th. Okay. So Mr. Wimmer is a yes. Ms. Bevins is a no. I am a no. And then the rest of you can let us know next time. Okay. All right. Anything else down here?
Nope.
Okay. Great. No administrative public hearings, no legislative public hearings, any other business? Okay. Then I will move that we adjourn this meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone.